from Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Filling in for Jeff on a new microphone. Hopefully we've got some of these tech issues fixed. But yeah, kind of a big news day today for the summer, certainly, definitely here in Washington. One of the big things that's being dealt with today in Washington, or not dealt with, and that's part of the problem, and it's not an issue that has cropped up unexpectedly. It's been here for months and months. Certainly for about a year now, definitely since Republicans passed that first reconciliation bill last summer, the Save America Act. What does the Save America Act do? I mean, it's been talked about so much, but I mean, let's remember what it actually does. It ensures that you are who you say you are when you vote, and that you actually are allowed to vote. It's pretty straightforward. You have to have a photo ID and appropriate documentation to register to vote. And then after that, when you actually vote, you just have to have a photo ID, like a driver's license. I mean, pretty straightforward stuff. In Alabama, when we vote, you know, I always show my driver's license. A lot of states don't do that. So it's very straightforward legislation. It's not any huge imposition, certainly when you consider how important and how sacred the right to vote and protecting that right is. But man, these Democrats, to hear them say it, it's just the most egregious assault on our democratic republic in the history of the nation. I mean, just some real wild stuff. But Republicans have been fighting over this for about a year now. And here's what's going on. I mean, this bill in several different forms has passed the House many times. I believe in the last Congress, the House passed what was then called the SAVE Act over 40 times. Over 40 times. I mean, they were attaching that bill to every piece of legislation that they were moving. If it was a bill dealing with, you know, your hot water heater regulations, the Republicans would slap the SAVE Act onto it. It's been through several iterations. It's actually been, in many ways, weakened to deal with some Democrat complaints in the House. Do you remember Tony Gonzalez, former congressman now, Tony Gonzalez? He had to abruptly cancel his reelection bid just a few months ago after it came out that he was having an affair with his staffer. This, you know, married guy with kids, was having an affair with a staffer who he, you know, obviously she was his employee. He controlled significant power over. He'd been giving her raises that were alleged to be significantly more than someone in her position should have, but she ended up committing suicide by setting herself on fire. Just, I mean, wild story. He ended up having to resign over it. But anyways, a lot of what the Republicans had done to weaken that bill were because of this guy's concerns. So this guy's out of the picture now. But the bill has been strengthened a little bit since then. Its current version, Save America Act, the House has passed it. It's been before the Senate for months and months, but it just does not have the votes, or at least that's what John Thune and some of his allies are saying. The truth is that for most Senate Republicans, this legislation is not a big deal. Trump talks about how if we don't pass it, we might not have a country anymore. And if you hear a lot of his reasoning behind it, it makes a lot of sense. Maybe you can argue whether or not Republicans need to start playing like Democrats and just cheating left and right and falsifying ballots and falsifying voters and having dead people vote or whatever. But I mean, you do that, the Democrats will throw you in jail. Republicans don't play like Democrats. Republicans fight with one arm behind their back because a lot of these Republicans in Washington, they don't see what's going on right now as an existential threat to our way of life. They, especially in the Senate, I won't call out any names here, but in the Senate, man, I tell you, they've got their little fiefdom, and that's all they care about. Unfortunately, a lot of senators are senators first and Americans second. They care about their little power centers in the Senate, their tiny little fiefdoms, their few pet issues. They like to wield their influence. And I saw something this week or this morning. I forget which senator it was. Said the Senate has, I believe it was Chuck Grassley, said the Senate has to remain an independent body. I think that this Republican Senate conference is just so dead set on being independent of the president that even on issues where they would agree with the president, they go in the opposite direction just to fluff their ego and so that they can tout that they're an independent and they're unbeholden to anyone, even an incredibly popular president. That's just the mindset in the Senate. And I mean, look, I worked in the Senate for 7 years for Jeff Sessions, worked in the House for several years after that. And the Senate is a different animal. I mean, these people, they truly are so insulated from the rest of the world. And look, a lot of that is by design of the founders. I get that. They've got six-year terms. The terms are staggered. So, you know, no more than a third of the Senate could ever get wiped out in one single election if there's ever some, you know, popular uprising over this issue or the other. A lot of that is because the founders wanted, you know, they envisioned these elder statesmen who were measured in their responses to the issues of the day and didn't rush too hard this direction or the other. But if you look at the Senate now, that's just not how it operates. For one, do you see a lot of elder statesmen in the Senate? I see a lot of elders. But a lot of these old people, I mean, they're not statesmen. I mean, when I think about statesmen, I think of people who go down on the, or at least in a Senate context, the people who go down on the Senate floor and actually hold a debate. I mean, the Senate's supposed to be the world's greatest deliberative body, but actually hold a debate in these issues, talk openly amongst one another, try to convince their colleagues in a collegial fashion, one way or another on an issue. They actually talk this stuff out. They did that a long time ago, back before C-SPAN and when everything is just performative. But the Senate floor now, I mean, it's just, it's senators down there talking about congratulating a high school football team from their state on winning the championship so that they can clip it and put it on YouTube or Facebook. It's so performative. It's just a stage. There's no deliberation that takes place. Everything is in those, to the extent there is any backroom dealing, it's all in that, you know, the smoke-filled back rooms. Now it's ironic how, we're far less transparent since we put cameras in the Senate, the Senate chamber. Don't want to get too far off on a tangent there, but if you look at the Save America Act, the Senate is doing everything it can, Senate Republicans, to show that they care about this issue, while everything that they are doing is ensuring that it doesn't get passed. Now, the way that things pass in the Senate, anything contentious, there are two ways, at least one of two ways, either through consent or exhaustion. What I mean by that is sometimes there's so much archaic procedures and rules in the Senate that govern how things work and the timeline, and a lot of it is to ensure that two things: the minority has the opportunity to express itself, and that there is full deliberation before the Senate actually does anything. the modern Senate, which LBJ, you know, Lyndon Johnson, was the one who did away with a lot of that. I mean, he instituted the widespread use of unanimous consent. The Senate can do whatever it wants by unanimous consent that bypasses all of these rules. I mean, it is a legitimate rule, so it's not breaking the rule to pass things by unanimous consent. But the Senate flies through a lot of things it wants done by unanimous consent. Outside of that, of course, you know, you have to pass things. There's cloture rules and all that where you have to have 60 votes to shut off debate. But again, there is no debate in the Senate because there isn't, like, folks just vote against cloture, saying that they want more time to debate an issue, even if they haven't been debating it. It's an abuse of the Senate rules, and Thune and Republicans need to do something to stop it. But besides the consent, there's that exhaustion aspect of how things are passed. If you look at the 1965 Civil Rights Act, which included, I mean, especially conservatives, there's a lot of stuff in there that probably not constitutional and whatnot. But the way that that bill was passed, Mike Mansfield, who is a Senate Majority Leader, at direction of LBJ, who then was president and was pulling a lot of Mansfield strings, he was really responsible for the rise of Mansfield in the Senate. He had taken Mansfield under his wing when he was majority, when LBJ was majority leader. But they kept that bill on the floor for months and months and months until finally they achieved the 67 votes necessary for cloture. Back then it was 67. Now it's just 2/3, so it's effectively 60. But look, these senators have all these other things that they want to do. They want to get their pork in these spending bills so they can tout it back in the districts. They have all these other little pet projects. Of course, there's other quote unquote must pass legislation that senators want to pass. But if a Senate Majority Leader is serious about trying to pass a bill, what's he going to do? He is going to make a priority by moving it to the Senate floor early on in the Congress. You know, we have two-year Congresses. He's going to move it to the Senate floor and get on it and stay on it until that exhaustion factor kicks in, and senators are worried about, well, the Republic will be in trouble if FISA doesn't pass and we don't have these spying powers, or if this spending bill or that spending bill doesn't pass, or a farm bill or whatever. But Thune hasn't done that because Thune is not serious about trying to change hearts and minds on Save America. He's not serious about passing it. And why would a Democrat ever flip and vote for cloture? Because they know that Thune would never keep it on the floor long enough to actually put them in a political bind. So everything that you're hearing from Thune and his top lieutenants and his top mouthpieces on trying to pass the Save America Act, it's a bunch of bunk. Also, look, if you're a senator and you're trying, if there's one motion, if it's a motion for cloture or on final passage of a bill, if you're trying to filibuster that, you only have two opportunities to speak on a motion. Each individual senator has two opportunities. So if there's let's just say there's 47 Democrats. I know there's some Republicans who are against the Save America Act too. But if there's 47 Democrats trying to filibuster a bill, each of them only has two opportunities to go as long as they can. And look, most of these folks are old, so they can't go that long. So eventually they'd run out of debate, and then you just move to the bill. But Thune doesn't want that. He never has. Don't listen to the lies. It's unfortunate that the Save America Act is where it is, but that's where they are. We'll talk more about this with Matt Henderson in a bit. This is Bradley J on the Jeff Poor Show.
I saw the light, no more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. This is Bradley J filling in for Jeff. Where is Jeff right now? Does anybody know where that layabout is? It must be nice to be able to take such a long vacation, Jeff. Looking forward to getting Jeff back. But I'm sure he's having a good time on vacation. There's a story I saw, and we got it up on Breitbart.com that caught my attention. The headline is, "Vulnerable North Carolina Democrat Hit with Brutal Anonymous Office Reviews Alleging Toxic Workplace Campaign Work on Official Time." Man, that's a... That's a humdinger. So there's this website, and I know the guys who founded it. It's like a website or an app. Back when I was a house staffer, they started it, and so it's been around several years. It's called like Connect, like CNCT. But they recently added a feature to it where if you're a congressional staffer, you can do an anonymous review of your boss. Does anyone remember Rate My Professor, ratemyprofessor.com? When I was at Auburn, that was the big thing, and you could go on and write if you could grade the professor in his class on how hard it was, how nice he was. There were even chili peppers. You could rank how hot your professor was. Just, I mean, it kind of absurd, but look, there's no doubt that when you were registering for classes, you know, a lot of us would reference that to figure out, honestly, probably, I will admit, I imagine my parents might be listening, but oftentimes I chose my classes based on how easy it was. That was the determining factor, how much work I was going to have to put in. But what can you do to be young and stupid again? But this website launched this new feature where you can rate your bosses and kind of dish on them anonymously, which, look, if you're a staffer in the House, those offices are not large. There's maybe 6 or 8 folks in the D.C. office in the House. So you're kind of playing with fire, I would think, if you put this stuff out there, even if you don't have your name on it. But really wild that this Don Davis guy, he's a Democrat from North Carolina. His district was redrawn. He's one of the most endangered House Democrats up for re-election right now. And he's got his staff, supposedly. I know that they take certain, it's of course anonymous, but the website, the app does take some precautions to ensure and validate that you are who you say you are. I won't make the comparison to the Save America Act or voting, but if an app can do it, you would think that our governments can. But man, you've got these kids now who are just so openly, well, maybe not openly, but willing to dish on their boss, put it out in the public square like that. Pretty wild. Look, I've worked in a lot of House offices. I'll say this. We've talked about how the Senate and the House are so different. I loved my time working in the Senate. It's very professional. It's very and Jeff Sessions, I mean, he was a rose amongst thorns in many ways. But it was a very professional atmosphere. Even the worst senators generally have professional offices. Man, the House, it's just playtime. Going from the Senate to the House, they often say is difficult. And I can tell you, I never much cared for the House. It was, I mean, offices had Nerf guns in them, playtime all around. Offices would take off at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to play beer pong in the hallway. Just that, I don't know. For those of us who were working in Congress because we actually wanted to do something, I don't know. I didn't take to the office to the House very well. But to put out there that you're being asked to do campaign work on official time, look, that's something that most offices do. There are some rules to protect against it, but I mean, really, it's something that goes on. Most of these members in personal offices and House offices are asked to quote unquote volunteer on the campaigns, but man, that's not the kind of that's not the kind of headline you want to see if you're running, and you're probably the new district lines have assured that you have an outside chance of winning. But man, wild stuff. We'll be back in a little bit. This is Bradley J with the Jeff Poor Show.
Every gambler knows that the secret
is it's midnight in Montgomery. Just hear that whippoorwill. See the stars light up the purple sky.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show. This is Bradley J. Excited that I will be spending midnight tonight in Montgomery. Excited to fly back from Washington, back to sweet home Alabama later this evening. But before then, there's a lot going on in Washington. Here to talk about some of that, have Matt Henderson with the America First Policy Institute. Matt, appreciate you joining the Jeff Moore Show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bradley.
All right, Matt. We've been talking about the Save America Act. Clearly, this is probably the biggest division between President Trump and John Thune. The president has been on this really since Reconciliation 1.0 passed last summer. This was kind of the next thing that Trump turned to. We can talk about Reconciliation 3.0 and maybe even 4.0 as well. But it just really seems like it's difficult to see a path forward on Save America Act. Tell us a little bit about where things stand right now and maybe where the disconnect is between Trump and Senate Republicans.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have to go back a little bit. You mentioned that this was Reconciliation 1.0, if we remember the One Big Beautiful Bill that passed last year. You know, some of it starts with that, but really this goes back to 2024. On the steps of the Capitol, there was Congressman Chip Roy, there was Senator Mike Lee, Speaker Johnson all gathered on the steps and really made a bold announcement that, you know, there were non-citizen voters who were actually voting in our elections. And we stood up there on the steps with him, and this was a big policy move, and it's something that needs to be shored up, and our elections need to be safe and secure. And, you know, that's really what kicked off this whole policy endeavor. And, you know, at this time, this was Democrats controlled, you know, the Senate, the White House, and, you know, we came in, thankfully, in 2025, and this was a very premier policy priority for the president in order to get this done. And, you know, we've just seen a lot of, I wouldn't necessarily call it division, but not a lot of cooperation between Democrats and Republicans. You know, it was Republicans had to gather together and pass the One Big Beautiful Bill. And, you know, since then, it's been a little bit difficult to get things over the finish line. And as we saw, you know, Bradley, when you were watching that a couple weeks ago when the president went on TV, national media, and explained that, look, it's not just a small issue. We have uncovered some serious, serious issues with, you know, the poor structure of some of our election process. You know, there's been over, I think it was around 275,000 non-citizen voters on state voter rolls. And that's only from conservative states or states that have cooperated in providing their voter rolls for review. There's other states that still we don't know about, and there's estimates where it could be in the millions. So this is a serious issue. And when we talk about Save America, a component of that is, you know, just removing non-citizens from state voter rolls. It's a common sense policy. And then, you know, another one is just showing a voter ID. It's very common sense policies. There's many states that do it. In fact, I believe 36 states already do that. These are very common sense policies that would really shore up and secure our elections, and it's something that we should all be doing.
Yeah, and it's something, I mean, these are policies that polling shows are even overwhelmingly popular with Democrats. I mean, most Democrat voters, they don't want non-citizens. They don't want illegals voting in their elections. But so, why is this something that even our Republican politicians, I think of like the Lisa Murkowskis, and she wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal a few days ago talking about why she's against it. I'll note that Not once has she offered any amendment to fix the problems that she said she has with it. She's never once engaged in any debate that I'm aware of to try to, in her eyes, improve the bill. So I'm sorry, what she's saying doesn't carry water with me. But if this is so overwhelmingly popular with the American people, regardless of party, why can't Senate Republicans rally around an issue like this? I mean, what does that say about the Senate as a body and Senate Republicans?
Well, that's a great question, Bradley. If I knew the answer to that, we would have this done already. But I think it comes down to just straight up obstinance and some who just, because the president is saying, you know, that this is something that's important, that they just don't want to do it. And I think it's been really interesting. You know, we fast forward to where we're at right now. The House had passed what's called a budget resolution, really a blueprint, in order to address this specific situation. They have some military funding that's going to go in this, but they've also have some funding that's going to address the Save America Act, and really the SAVE Act. And it's kind of a new way that they would be able to do it. And this is, since it's a budget resolution for reconciliation, all that's needed is a simple majority vote. So we don't have to worry about the 60 votes in the Senate or anything else like that. It's just, this is a budget provision, and this is something that could easily get through. And it's unfortunate that we have to do it like this, but, you know, this is a solution, and I'm optimistic that this is something that could get done before Labor Day.
So we're talking with Matt Henderson here with AFPI, the America First Policy Institute. One of the outside groups that probably does the most in advocating for the president's priorities and working with individual members of Congress and their staffs. I know Matt spends a lot of time talking with these senators and congressmen and trying to find a legislative path forward for the president's priorities. You talk about including some provisions of the Save America Act inside reconciliation. And so to refresh everybody, as Matt said, you only need 50 plus one votes in the Senate for reconciliation. You don't need the 60 votes that most other legislation does. The One Big Beautiful Bill was passed in reconciliation. That was 1.0. A few months ago, we had reconciliation 2.0, which funded the border aspects of DHS that Democrats were blocking. Now there's another reconciliation bill that we're working on that the House already passed. It's reconciliation 3.0, and there are some Save America Act aspects in there. It's not full blown because you have to comply with certain restrictions on how reconciliation is used. I mean, it is, after all, budget reconciliation, so it's supposed to be about issues dealing with the budget. But so I guess my question is, are the Save America Act provisions that will be in this reconciliation bill, is it going to be anything significant? I mean, is it just kind of a fig leaf on Republicans for them to be able to say they did something? Is this anything that's going to move the needle and actually prevent this type of stuff from happening, this illegal voting in blue states?
Yeah, that's a good question, Bradley. You know, one of the things we have to look at, of course, we don't have the full text in front of us right now, but, you know, what we've been told countless times is that this is something that's going to be, you know, as close to a full loaf as possible. And, you know, it's something that is going to be in there, and it's something that, you know, we can count on. You know, that is a good question, and that's something that we're watching very closely, and we're pushing for the full measures of this to be included in this text. But, you know, we're going to have to wait and see, you know, what comes out. And let me just, some of the provisions that have been talked about is this granting component. You know, a granting component could be in there where it funds states for their election activities, but puts parameters saying you must require a voter ID, or you must have your state voter rolls checked for non-citizen voters or non-citizens removed from your state voter rolls. You know, some might say that that's half a loaf or three-fourths of a loaf or not the complete loaf, but the reality is, you know, we have a thing called school choice that passed last year, which allows for attending, you know, non-public schools, parochial schools, and we have that nationwide, and that's available to every single state. And people said that that was half a loaf, but we have states like New York, like Pennsylvania, that have actually signed up for this. There's a number of states that have actually complied and gone forward with this. So, Bradley, to answer your question, I think it's in the future, but it's something that we're pushing for to really get the whole thing in there.
And is this the kind of thing? And look, I know that AFPI, y'all push, you know, America First agenda. President Trump only has a certain amount of time left as president, but presumably that America First movement, you know, is something that's going to be around for a little while. So it sounds like y'all are kind of taking the long game with this, and yeah, we can get a little bit of it now, or we can try to and just move the needle a little bit and then get a little bit more down the road. Let's say that Reconciliation 3.0 does pass and it has some good Save America stuff in it. Is down the road, is it going to be something that eventually, to get that full loaf that you talk about, is going to require those 60 votes to get? Or dare I say they weaken the filibuster or institute a talking filibuster? I mean, is that what it's going to take in order to get to finally secure our elections, or is there some kind of workaround?
You know, that's another good question. This should be done immediately, and it's actually pretty ridiculous that it's taken this long. I mean, you know, our elections are in a crisis state, and they need fixed. You mentioned it before that this is a issue that basically every American supports. Every politician supports, regardless of party, and it's unfortunate that we're at this level in terms of dealing with this. I mean, we want everything done. We want it done as quickly as possible. This shouldn't be something that we continue to fiddle with years down the road. Hopefully, after Election Day, there'll be more America First patriots who come into Congress, and we can continue implementing the America First agenda, because, you know, one of the things that happened over the last couple of years is we put out a statement that, look, this isn't something that's temporary. The America First movement is here for good. And we put out a release that, look, we have no plans of going anywhere. We're going to be here for 100 years. You know, America First means keeping America safe. It means keeping our elections secure. It means keeping our children safe. You know, Riley, one of the components of the Save America Act is ending men and boys and girls sports and banning this child sex mutilization that has gone on for the last several years. And it's quite frankly, it's ridiculous that this is actually permitted to go on. And this is a policy that needs addressed. We need to stop this right now. We also need to continue to grow our economy. You know, there are simple things that can be done to bring more money into the pockets of every American family. We saw this last year with the One Big Beautiful Bill. A lot of people don't realize that if the standard deduction wasn't adjusted, every single American's taxes would go up by about $5,000. You know, we need more tax cuts. We don't need things going the other way. And then, you know, we need to address this corrosive practice of taxpayer fraud, abuse of taxpayer money. And we need to codify some of these, you know, fraud reforms that we're seeing. We're just seeing, you know, money flying out the door and people taking advantage of some of these loopholes and some of these other provision. It's, you know, the Nick Shirley video that we've all seen about what's happening in Minnesota is something that, quite frankly, has happened in every state.
Yeah. And it seems like, look, Republicans, a lot of the stuff you're talking about are things that the administration is doing on its own that Congress hasn't been very helpful with. But look, I love that Republicans, I used to always say back when I worked on the Hill, you know, like, I hate Democrats, but I really hate Republicans, because Republicans, again, they don't understand how serious this is, like what we're actually up against. This isn't a fight anymore between, like, Republicans want to keep your taxes low and Democrats want to spend more on social programs. Like, no, they're trying to cut your child's genitals off, your kindergartner's genitals off, and if you try to protest or even insist you have to know about it, that you'll be put in jail. It's like, I actually like that Republicans now are being aggressive using reconciliation where you only need the 50 plus one votes. But what does that say about the state of the Senate here? We've got maybe a minute left, that there's nothing that Republicans want to do that Trump has touched that any Democrats can get behind, even if it's on like some of this common sense, very popular stuff.
Yeah, I think it says something about the state of where we're at. You know, Congress had to, you know, wear team shirts in order to pass the working families tax cuts or the One Big Beautiful Bill. And I think it just says a lot. You know, one of the accomplishments that has been done this year is probably the biggest conservative accomplishment that's been done in generations, and that's the One Big Beautiful Bill. And that was such an accomplishment by securing the border, getting that tax cut, making sure our spending didn't increase. It essentially reversed every single thing that had been done by the Biden administration. You know, this was a previous administration that hit record spending, had an open border, you know, did damage to this country by some of the policies that came in.
And much of what the Biden administration did was through the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed by reconciliation, interesting to say. We're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time. Matt Henderson with America First Policy Institute, thank you for joining the Jeff Poor Show. We'll be right back.
Couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendant. Oh, mama, can this really be the end? To be stuck inside a mobile with the Memphis Blues again.
Mona, welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. Bradley J. Wrapping up the second hour of today's program. We've got one more left, and I'll be with you tomorrow, broadcasting from Cecil, Alabama, outside of Pike Road. Excited to get back home. I'm going to spend some time with my family. My brother got engaged just this week, so we're really excited about that, and got a sick dog that I need to see, too. So if Any of you dog owners, you know how that goes and how difficult it is when your dog that you love is in pain. So I'm gonna have an eventful time back and looking forward to that. One thing that has really it's South Carolina specific, but I believe that it's really gotten folks across the country thinking about their own representation in Congress and just some really broader issues. It's this South Carolina Senate race that's happened after Lindsey Graham passed away. I mean, 71 years old. Look, Lindsey was, I mean, he was no spring chicken, but he wasn't an old man. But, you know, to every man upon this earth, death cometh soon or late, as it says. But wow, to have his sister to be appointed to that seat, Darlene Graham Nadone, I believe. It's really unusual that you would have someone who has been in, you know, political adjacent work throughout her career, but never run for political office, to be appointed to that seat and then to be endorsed by Trump to fill the seat on a more permanent level in the undergoing campaign. I mean, that's just really unusual. There's a history of that in Alabama where we have had, gosh, I think it's been since the 60s or 70s when we had a senator die and his widow was appointed. I think it's happened a couple more times. Generally, that doesn't bode well in the actual election to replace them. Look, incumbency helps, even if it's incumbency that comes from an appointment and not an election, but it sure doesn't guarantee anything. Ralph Norman, congressman from South Carolina, is also in that race against Lindsey's sister. You have Russell Fry, another congressman. A poll came out today that has Ralph Norman actually leading in that race to replace her.
Hey, I was country.
Man, that's going to be an exciting one. I think it's underrated at this point how that special primary is. I mean, that's going to be exciting, especially if it gets to the end and it's still competitive. What's Trump going to do? We'll have to watch that one. But yeah, we'll talk about some more election stuff coming up in the third hour. This is Bradley J with the Jeff Poore Show. We'll be back.